It's Brad, and we got a special episode of Start Here for you today. It was 4 years ago this week that a virus effectively shut down the world. A pandemic had just been declared, and quickly, we had to marshal every public health tool we had at our disposal that we developed for decades. I'm talking about vaccine technology, genetic sequencing. Think about how quickly tests became available. And all this was possible because for years, scientists had been warning us how devastating a pandemic could be. Well, recently, one of my colleagues approached me asking, what happens if the next infectious disease threat isn't a virus at all? Today, we're diving deep, literally deep into the earth, to learn about this emerging health threat you might not have thought much about. Fungus. That's right, the stuff that grows on the forest floor, or the thing that caused your athlete's foot. Even the stuff of sci-fi, the thing behind the zombie apocalypse in HBO's The Last of Us.
Mind cover. Don't look back. Run!
That zombie fungus depicted in the show is based on a real fungus that infects ants. Good news, doesn't infect people. But there are other fungal infections that kill an estimated 2 million people around the world annually. We've seen devastating cases pop up over just the last few years.
Federal health officials are on alert after a jump in cases of a drug-resistant fungus.
Health officials, they're investigating nearly 100 suspected cases. This is a fungal infection linked to a paper mill in Michigan.
A warning from the CDC about traveling to Mexico for plastic surgery. Some people reportedly coming back to the U.S. with a potentially deadly fungal infection.
And the scary part of this is the threat is getting worse. Climate change, warming temperatures mean that this invasion is growing ever more real. Treatment options are still limited. So today, we're going to spend our whole show on this. Sony Salzman from ABC's medical unit has been reporting this out for months, talking to survivors who have been infected, along with experts on the front lines who are unraveling medical mysteries. And Sony's going to take it from here.
One of the hotbeds of fungal infection in the United States might surprise you. It's in the dry deserts of Arizona.
Hi, my name's Allison Karsh. I live in Tucson, Arizona. I would describe myself as a mom.
Allison moved to Arizona from Washington, D.C. with her husband and two kids a few years ago. It was an adjustment.
It was a real shock moving to the desert. And it was like, everything is dry. Everything is prickly. Where are the trees? And particularly as a mom of young kids, I felt like I had this feeling for the first year we were here of like, our environment is not compatible with life.
But Allison eventually grew to love the outdoors in Arizona too. She spent a lot of time hiking with her kids and her dog. She's also into gardening. In 2022, she started growing native plants in her desert yard.
Ooh, there's a nice little dusty plume.
I spent maybe late February through April digging a ton of holes in the dirt. And digging, moving dirt, just constantly doing all of this landscaping. And I remember at some point in April, about once a week, I'll take my dog for a hike, and I made it between 5 and 10 minutes. And I was like, I just can't do this today. I just can't keep walking. And I remember walking a few more minutes and just being confused because it's flat ground. It's not challenging. And I couldn't even put my finger on why I felt like I couldn't do it. But I just turned around and came home.
Allison climbed into bed, and she could hardly get out again for weeks. She went to the doctor. It wasn't COVID. They put her on antibiotics. Those didn't help. Neither did steroids. She was sleeping 18 hours a day. Then Allison developed a painful rash on her legs. She was eventually diagnosed with a respiratory disease called valley fever, caused by a fungus called coccidioides. Scientists call it coxie for short. Valley fever wasn't something Allison had heard of before she moved to Arizona, and it can be hard to diagnose. The symptoms often look like pneumonia. In fact, doctors say around a third of what look like pneumonia cases in the Tucson and Phoenix areas are actually cases of valley fever. For Allison, all the dirt she'd been hauling around to build her garden, it might have kicked up spores of coccidioides. John Galgiani is Allison's doctor, and he's one of the leading experts on valley fever.
If you inhale one of these spores, it gets into your lungs, and that starts an infection. And that can happen whether you're out dirt biking or doing things, kicking up a lot of dust, or in fact, just living in the area where this fungus lives also, because these spores really do travel around.
Galgiani says the valley in valley fever refers to the San Joaquin Valley of California. In the 1930s, the medical community identified case after case of this unique set of symptoms connected with COXI. But the valley name is a bit of a misnomer, because two-thirds of all valley fever infections we know about in the U.S. occur in Arizona, with 50% of all U.S. infections in Phoenix and the surrounding area. When you think about all the things living on Earth, people often think of plants and animals, and sometimes bacteria. But fungi are their own diverse kingdom of organisms, from the mushrooms you eat to tiny spores you can't see with your naked eye. Fungi are decomposers. They eat rotting matter and make way for new life. But they can also be opportunists, making a home in living creatures. Try it with me. Take a deep breath right now. Depending on where you are in the world, you may be inhaling dozens, maybe even hundreds of fungal spores. Most likely, nothing will happen. The vast majority are harmless. But depending on how many you inhale and the species of fungi living in your area, you might get sick. The spores that cause valley fever, for example, start off tiny. But once inside your lungs, they transform into a larger sphere-like organism. Those spheres eventually burst open, spewing hundreds of spores and spreading the infection further. The immune system kicks in, fighting back and putting those spores to sleep. People with valley fever will live with those spores inside of them in hibernation mode for the rest of their life. But for some people, it can take months before the immune system can beat back the infection. And for Allison, more than 6 months after she was feeling those symptoms, physical exertion was still hard for her.
The closest thing I can compare it to is having a newborn baby, where it's like, that's fatigue. Like, you're so tired that your brain just wants to, you just want to power down. It's like, if I had to do something physical right now to keep us alive, we might not stay alive. Like, it's real fatigue. And I would get in bed and in 90 seconds, I'm unconscious. And then maybe I wake up at 8:30 and I can get a few things done until 10. But even early October, a full day, it was like by 6:30, there was nothing left in the tank.
Allison did get better. But not everyone recovers on their own. Dr. Galgiani says a small percentage see the infection travel beyond the lungs.
Other people have it go through the bloodstream from the lungs where it originally started to other parts of the body like bones, like skin lesions, abscesses. It literally can go any place in the body.
Even the brain.
Meningitis is the worst because it's uniformly fatal if it's untreated.
You've probably heard of meningitis before. It's that nasty disease that involves the swelling of the membranes surrounding the brain. It can be caused by a range of infections, such as bacteria and viruses, or a fungus. And fungal meningitis can be especially dangerous.
So if you get meningitis, you need to be diagnosed correctly and then treated for the rest of your life with the drugs we have available. So it's a long-term thing.
In extreme cases, some patients need a port drilled into the skull or spine that can deliver medicine directly. And it's rare, but as Dr. Galgiani says, people can die fighting a fungal infection. Galgiani says the trouble is physicians in Arizona aren't testing enough for valley fever. They aren't trained to detect it. And the tests themselves can give false negatives. For Allison, who did have a false negative, the delay in diagnosis meant it was too late to take an antifungal medicine. Globally, fungi are considered the forgotten disease, even though these infections kill more people a year than tuberculosis or malaria. The World Health Organization says this is all getting worse and that we don't have our eye on the ball. the main fungus expert at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention here in the U.S. trying to track these things, is Dr. Tom Chiller.
I often call myself a fungal doctor or the chief fun guy at CDC.
Chiller, the fun guy that he is, heads the mycotic diseases branch at the CDC.
So I think it's important for people to note that, yeah, we need to consider fungi in any type of milieu where we're talking about infectious diseases. They are there. They are here to stay. They are smart. They are hard to treat. We have very limited treatment options right now.
Chiller estimates between 3 to 5 million fungal species exist, but he says only about 120,000 have been identified. And of those, only a few hundred cause human disease. Those are the ones he's concerned about. He's worked on the WHO's fungal priority pathogens list. There's Aspergillus, which is in the air we breathe. That's fine for most people, but if you're immune compromised, it can make you seriously ill. There's Cryptococcus that attacks the lungs of people with advanced HIV. There's Candida auris, a yeast, which stalks sick people in hospitals. And a new species of Candida burst onto the scene in 2015.
What really turned the nozzle on high for us is when we were talking to colleagues in England, in London, and they were having a problem with this organism in a cardiology hospital, and it caused them to actually shut down the unit to be able to try to clean up the hospital.
The British hospital had to use bleach to kill the fungus, which is pretty harsh on medical equipment. But even worse, Chiller says the fungus was evolving to resist treatment and started spreading quickly.
And this really came out of nowhere, you know, about 15 years ago. We had no idea, no precedent for this in the fungal world. And now it's in probably over 50 countries, and in half of the United States have reported at least one case. It's definitely spreading. It's not going away. It's here to stay.
Chiller says historically, we haven't worried about fungi because, frankly, our bodies are too hot for them to thrive. But twin crises are converging to change all of that. One, we're living longer but sicker, with a higher prevalence of things like obesity, diabetes, and inflammatory diseases. And more modern marvels like organ transplants and chemotherapy. Those things save lives, but make us more vulnerable and better hosts for the fungi to thrive. Second, the planet is warming, and boom, that is double jeopardy. As the planet warms, it becomes a cozier home for fungi to thrive. Farmers have to use more antifungal drugs to protect their crops. Natural disasters create moist, untamed conditions for fungi to grow and potentially infect victims through injuries and fresh wounds. One day in the future, if fungi continue to evolve in an increasingly warming world, they could become even more adept at thriving in our 98.6 degree bodies.
So our big push is to say, look, these aren't the highest priority diseases. They aren't the lowest priority either, but they're here to stay. We need better tools to diagnose them and to treat them with.
Right now, there aren't any vaccines to protect people from fungal infections. But good news, there might be a solution on the horizon, at least for valley fever. And the answer, as strange as it might seem, involves a retired NFL tight end and his French bulldog.
I'm obsessed with French bulldogs. So I said, if I win the Super Bowl, I'm going to get the Frenchie.
I promise it all connects. More after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability? And would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
We've told you valley fever is a big problem for humans, but it also runs rampant in dogs in Arizona, too. An estimated 6 to 10% of dogs living in major counties in Arizona get valley fever every year. John Galgiani, Allison Karsh's doctor, says it's 3 to 4 times more prevalent in dogs than in people. And Dr. Galgiani points out that even though dogs don't complain about their symptoms like human patients do, it's clear that they do suffer.
They often have coughs, and often they have lung symptoms, and they're wheezing a little bit. The infection goes out of the lungs much more frequently, at least in terms of what is diagnosed in clinical practices. And so they have symptoms of pain and swelling outside of the chest, or they get weight loss and just feel lousy and mope around and limp and can't move.
Treatment can be really expensive for pet owners. Researchers estimate that Arizona dog owners spend at least $60 million a year to diagnose, treat, and care for their dogs with valley fever. About a quarter of cases involving dogs get quite bad. Some don't make it through. They die fighting the disease, or their owners are unable to pay for treatment and wind up having to put their dogs to sleep. So, understandably, for a lot of people, this fungus is not something they want their dog to mess with. One of those concerned dog owners is Rob Gronkowski.
Robbie, look! We did it! We made it, Ralphie!
That's Rob with his French bulldog, Ralphie. You may have heard of Gronkowski, or Gronk. He played 11 seasons in the NFL.
Deep drop, Brady, deep ball, looking for Gronkowski! He's got it!
First for the Patriots, then for the Buccaneers.
Brady keeps, end zone wide open, touchdown, Gronkowski!
And he adores his Frenchie.
I have always wanted a French bulldog. I'm obsessed with French bulldogs. All my friends have French bulldogs. And every time I went to their house, the French bulldog and I, we always connected. They always slept on my shoulder when we were going to bed at night. I'm like, I got to get one of these. So I said, if I win the Super Bowl when I went down to Tampa Bay my first year, I'm going to get the Frenchie. And what happened? We won the Super Bowl. 2 weeks later, I went and got my first French bulldog ever. And the guy is my best friend to this day.
Gronk is more familiar with valley fever than your average person. He's had friends get sick from it, starting with a teammate back in college when he played for the University of Arizona.
I remember he was very, very sick. And at that time, when you're in college, you hear about a disease and you're just a kid, you know? I'm an 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid. I'm just like, oh, my friend's very sick. You know, he's got valley fever. It doesn't really click what that really means to me.
That teammate ultimately overcame his infection. But a couple of years ago, another one of Gronk's former U of A teammates died from the disease. Sterling Lewis, a linebacker who used to lead the Wildcats in tackles, was only 32 years old.
I was very saddened about Sterling Lewis. He was a great kid. He was a hard worker. He made me a better player. He made me a better person out there. And I remember to this day the conversation we had when we were both leaving college. He goes, yo, Rob, you're going to make the pros. Tell him you're not signing unless if I come with you. And then I saw him again once when I was in the pros. He's like, yo, you forgot to take me with you. And we just started laughing because he's a great kid. He had a great personality. There's no doubt about it.
Sterling's death from valley fever in 2020 came as a big surprise to Gronkowski.
It just raised that much more awareness in my head when I heard about that situation. So it was very, very sad. You know, he was very young. He was a great kid. He did a lot of good here at the University of Arizona, and hopefully in the future, things like that can be preventative, and there's no situations like that.
It's probably not a coincidence that two of Gronk's football teammates would encounter and get sick from Valley Fever. Tom Chiller, our chief fun guy at the CDC, says he worked at a Valley Fever clinic and saw the most devastating cases like Valley Fever meningitis. And he saw those cases in football players.
Think about it. These guys are in the dirt. Some of the most, you know, highly contaminated dirt in the world with Valley Fever. So, yeah, I could see how a football player might be at an occupational risk if he was playing in dirt, for sure.
Between Gronk's experience at U of A and wanting to protect his dog, Ralphie, he put his mind and his NFL dollars to help solve the problem of Valley Fever. He's become an investor in a Valley Fever vaccine for dogs. It's a project with the University of Arizona and a biotech startup called Anavive Life Sciences. A friend introduced Gronk to the founder and CEO, Dylan Balls.
When you look at specifically Arizona and Central California and so forth, the families that are losing their pets the most to Valley Fever are lower income families. So you already have this difficult situation. Then your dog gets diagnosed. You can't afford $2,000 a year to treat it. And so our whole sort of mission is, how do we bring a $20 preventative vaccine to market?
One of the U of A researchers working on the vaccine is John Galgiani, Allison's doctor.
The idea of a vaccine has been around for 70 years. And I've been involved with multiple projects in the past, some of which went to clinical trials, but nothing has really worked until recently.
The way that the vaccine works is that there's a gene in the Valley Fever fungus that's critical to its ability to cause disease. Take that gene out, it won't cause sickness. The vaccine is the fungus without that gene. So far, studies show that it's safe and protects against Valley Fever in the two species of animals it's been tested on.
Everything shows that it's a very special vaccine, and that means it's now not just in mice, but it's also in dogs, it's protective.
And to be clear, this vaccine, even though it's only meant for dogs for now, it would be groundbreaking. Here's Dylan Balls again.
It'll be the first pan fungal vaccine for any species, human, pets, etc. And this would open the door to creating vaccines for any number of potential fungi infections.
Like Dylan says, they want to open the door to more antifungal vaccines. Vaccines that would work to protect people, too. But getting those shots into human arms is going to be harder. First off, the science is tricky. It's tough to make a medicine or a vaccine that can fight the fungi but isn't toxic to us. Second, developing vaccines for fungi is expensive, really expensive. Labs have to go through super rigorous safety testing, which means they need a big pharma company that thinks it's going to make a profit. That can be hard math for the pharma company, because ideally, if a vaccine works great, you only need it once. Globally, fungal infections are seen as more of a problem in poorer countries where governments might not have the resources to pay for a vaccine. But scientists have hope that fungal vaccines will pay off in the future, because, paradoxically, the situation is getting worse. More people are getting infected with fungi. John Galgiani says the Valley Fever vaccine for animals could be here soon. The data show it works. It's just a matter of getting USDA approval. But a human vaccine takes years longer. Scientists would have to show the vaccine is as safe in people as it is in dogs. And they need to learn a lot more about how it would work in people. But John Galgiani believes it's possible.
I'm an optimist. I think if money was not an object, we could have this under consideration at the FDA within 8 years. And we're working on that very hard. But how fast we get this depends really on how much people want this.
For people who live in the areas that are at risk of catching Valley Fever, the wait for a vaccine can feel long. Allison Karsh in Tucson wishes it had come in time for her and prevented 9 months of misery. But she and her 6-year-old daughter are grateful that Allison finally has her health back.
How much does mommy sleep now? Okay, so not so much, but still a lot? Yeah.
Now.
How much do you wish I slept?
Only this much. Not even sleep.
Not even sleep? Awake all the time?
Yes, except for nighttime.
except for nighttime, yeah. Yeah, I would like that too.
For Allison, one of the hardest things about recovery is coming to terms with the fact that what made her so sick is a fungus. A fungus.
Bacteria, it's like, well, we have antibiotics. And it feels like we have some control or way to respond. And viruses, which we have learned in recent years, we do not have the control over that we think. But we do have vaccines and we have antivirals. We have ways to mediate this. We feel at least the illusion of control, if not some control. I don't know about fungus. Like if you talk to a doctor, they might be able to list off things. But to me, it was like the fungus is the top of the food chain compared to us. The fungus wins.
We're increasingly living in a world where organisms related to the mushrooms we eat are getting us very sick. Most scientists agree that our greatest infectious threat is from another virus, like COVID-19, capable of causing a global pandemic. But even if fungi aren't the highest priority pathogen right now, there is a real risk that fungi will take us by surprise, and we won't have enough vaccines, tests, or treatments for an increasingly urgent threat.
That was Sony Salzman of ABC's Medical Unit. Phenomenal reporting. By the way, Sony asked the CDC chief fungi, Tom Schiller, if he had ever seen the HBO show The Last of Us, the one about the fungus and the zombies. He was like, yeah, of course. He says he's not worried about zombie fungi eating our brains anytime soon, though, so that's good. This special episode of Start Here was reported by Sony Salzman and Nicole Wetzman, produced by Vika Aronson and Sasha Aslanian, with lots of help from Eric Strauss, executive producer for ABC's Medical Unit. Start Here is produced by Kelly Therese, Jen Newman, Brenda Salinas Baker, Vika Aronson, Cameron Chertavian, Anthony Ali, Mara Milwaukee, and Madeline Wood. Ariel Chester is our social media producer. Josh Cohan is director of podcast programming. I'm our managing editor. Laura Mayer is our executive producer. Thanks to Lakia Brown, John Newman, Tara Gimble, and Liz Alessi. Special thanks this week to Chris Berry, Andrew Evans, and Amira Williams. I'm Brad Milkey. I'm off to start next week, but we will have all the news of the weekend ready for you on Monday. See you next week.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.